Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, March the 20th. And this afternoon, I guess about 11:30 or 12 o'clock or so, or not this afternoon, but I guess today, around 11:30, 12 o'clock, I was in the car and I was listening to the press conference with President Trump, the daily press conferences that he's been doing. And then he had that encounter with the member of the press. His first name is Peter. Don't remember right now what network he was on. We'll find out in just a second. But he had that back and forth with him, and I actually thought President Trump did a great job in presenting his side of the story. And then when I was driving home, I said to myself, this is a great topic for a program, and who better to talk with me about this than our good friend Frank Burke up in Wisconsin, who not only is a great friend of our show, a businessman, but also a guy who actually wrote a book about the media. And so I said, let me book him. And I called him, and here he is about to join us all the way up from Wisconsin. Frank, how is the weather up there? Let me get you on. There you are. Frank,
well,
how are you today? Took a
I'm
while
fine.
To get you on, but it wasn't your fault. It was my switch here that it took you a minute to get you on. But welcome. It's great to hear from you.
Well, likewise. It's an honor to be here. And I can only say that today we had snow in the morning, which has largely disappeared, but it is cold. Yesterday we had a lot of snow, 3-4 inches. The day before that we had rain. The day before that we had sunshine. So, if whatever you want, you've got it in Wisconsin.
Well, I don't know. Once, not long ago, they used to call that climate change. I guess it has a different meaning now.
But yeah.
At one time, when the climate would change like that, being up in Wisconsin, I remember living up there for a while, and when that would happen, and it would happen sometimes in the month of March, you would get some snow. I remember this old lady, very funny old lady who lived in our neighborhood, who would say stuff like, well, you know, this climate changes from time to time. So that's what comes to my mind, you know. They used to call that climate change. I guess it has a different
yes.
meaning now, Frank.
Well, I think, you know, when I was a kid, they called it the weather.
Well, they did. In fact, they used to have people that came on at for the local news called weathermen,
yes.
who
yes.
would tell us about stuff like that. But here
and
in Texas,
being sexist, there were weather
yeah.
girls too.
Well, that's right. We don't want to make that mistake we want to observe all the rules of PC that are out there, but. But yes, we've had some crazy weather down here too. A little bit of rain, but other than that, the weather seems like such a small problem compared to everything else, Frank.
It really does. It really does. And all of these invented Armageddon-like things have paled in just such a short time in view of something that is a real threat.
Right. Well, I wanted to talk to you today. I thought about you, and really, I'm so happy that you're joining us. You wrote a book about the media, if you remember,
yeah.
I guess a couple of years ago. And so I thought it would be worthwhile to put this on the table with you and talk a little bit about the media. And I'll say up front, number one, that we need a good media. We need a media that is inquisitive, that will ask questions, that will hold the politicians accountable. But there's a fine line between that and what I think we're seeing a lot of these days, and that's just a media that just likes to, I think, sensationalize, if that's the right word. And in this particular case with President Trump, here is President Trump, Frank, and I'm going to be a bit long-winded here, but I want to set up my question. Here's President Trump dealing with a pretty complicated situation. I think in a rapidly short time, he's put together a pretty good team. I think they're doing the best they can. They're using just about every resource that they have. I think they're, as I said, I think they're doing a good job. They're certainly trying their best. And you have a news media constantly nitpicking about this and nitpicking about that. And frankly, Frank, I get frustrated with that. And I think a lot of Americans do, too. So when President Trump today got into that encounter with Peter, whatever his name is, from whatever network it was,
NBC.
I said, NBC, I
Peter
said,
Alexander,
Mr. President,
yeah,
I just said, Mr. President, well done. Give it right back to him because, you know, he doesn't understand that this is a complicated problem. And he's just trying to get a headline. So I just felt good, and I said, well, I'd love to hear what Frank has to say about it. So tell me about it, Frank.
Well, let's have a little bit of background, which is, you know, you and I always take the historical approach. But when years ago, in the 19th century, mid-late 19th century, when newspapers were the only real news media that people had, many times industrialists or people who had a cause, generally speaking, it was an economic one, that they wanted to push, they bought a newspaper. Commodore Vanderbilt bought one, Jay Gould did when they were vying for control of the Erie Railroad, and the newspaper just printed their side of it. That became political. Now, over the years, there was a tendency after that period, the muckrakers kind of killed a lot of that, and you had newspapers that were blatantly political, but they covered the news as news, and they kept the text to the editorial page. For instance, the Chicago Tribune, under Colonel McCormick, was very, very anti-FDR. And but, you know, they did cover the Chicago news, and they covered it as honestly as they could, and some of the world news. What you have today, I'm afraid, is the fact that the newspapers have largely failed. They are no longer the primary media. But you do have them owned, what's left of them, and their media-related chains, radio stations, TV, are in the hands of blatantly political figures. Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. That's one of the most influential papers in the United States. The New York Times has long been an ultra-leftist rag to the point where they no longer actually care about the truth. And they do it in a variety of ways, that they will not cover something that is important. But where it has really gone to the dogs, and you saw that today, is exactly what you saw, is the fact that the broadcast people, the competition is terrific in that. And they have no more respect for other people, especially for offices like the President of the United States. A lot of this came about during Watergate, when you had Woodward and Bernstein, and, oh my God, they became the heroes of the nation. They brought down Richard Nixon, and Richard Nixon was a bad president, so people said. He really wasn't. He did a lot of great things. But the bottom line was, you had these two people, and after that, every kid in journalism school wanted to be an investigative reporter.
Right. He wanted to bring down a president, Frank. I didn't mean to interrupt, but what they really wanted to do was bring down another president. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just wanted to get that in.
No, you're absolutely right. And this created a terrible thing with journalism. It created a carelessness. It created as the media kind of sunk, it created this drive for ratings. So what I think has happened, what I think the result is that a great many people no longer pay attention to the media. They regard it as what it is, a sideshow. And that is tragic because We're now in a national emergency. This is truly a national emergency. Lives are going to be lost in this for want of information on how to live, how to direct yourself. And what's the result of it? It's being politicized. It should not be politicized. This is a time to put all of that behind us and to say, look, here's the reality, let's go. And let's trust the president because he has put together the best team you could possibly hope for to work on this.
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly right. And I think that, you know, just a couple of examples here of what I would describe as just recent media history. You now have this obsession on the part of some in the media to – they put out this narrative. I saw this the other day where they put out – President Trump said this on this day and on this day and on this day. And, of course, all of that proves that he really didn't care about the virus. So because he was saying this or answering this question or answering that question. Now, the problem is they don't give you any context. You never get to hear
yes,
the question that he was answering. So it's an absolutely worthless thing to say or to quote somebody if you don't have the question. I mean, if you did that in a courtroom, the judge would throw you out in a minute. Okay,
mm-hmm.
If you did it in a academic thesis, you would flunk because a quote without context is absolutely worthless. So they say, well, on the 22nd of February, he said, no, this problem is under control. So that must mean that he didn't care about it or that he was lying about it. No, it doesn't mean anything like that. Okay,
exactly.
What it probably means, see, this is my thinking is this. I think on the 30th of January, he shut down the trips with China. Because I think
mm-hmm.
he saw at that moment that this was a big deal. So he shut down the flights. And then for the next few weeks, as he was putting the team together, he wanted to keep the country calm. He wanted the country to stay calm because he didn't want people panicking about this. And much the same way, Frank, that if you're in an airplane, you say you're in a flight and you're going from London to New York. And in the middle of the flight, there's all these kinds of turbulence. And the pilot gets a report that says, the next 30 minutes are really going to be bad, okay? So hang in there. Well, the pilot is not going to come on the microphone and say to people, hey, guys, the next 30 minutes are going to be really bad, so you better call your wife and let her know that we may not make it home, you know?
Exactly.
You know, the pilot is going to come on the phone and say, hey, guys, don't worry. This is a great aircraft. We got it under control, but we're going to get you home. Just bear with us. And I think that's what he was doing, but the anger, what makes me angry is, I'm not apologizing for Trump. I'm simply saying, come on, let's give this guy at least a fair chance. Let's
well,
give
yeah.
this guy at least a chance to solve the problem, not nitpick and criticize every little thing that he does just because we don't like him.
Well,
yeah. That's the way it works, Frank.
Well, you know, this is the whole thing. It's exactly what happened today. Because what that jackass from NBC accused Trump of was creating false hope. Now, what is Trump supposed to say? Is he supposed to get up and it had to do with that drug that is used for malaria. And what happened with that, if you followed it, about two nights ago, 5 o'clock in the morning, I guess European time, it came out that a doctor in France had used that drug with 40 people who had coronavirus, and there was a 100% recovery rate. The study had been, in so far as possible, peer-reviewed, but, you know, obviously people are still skeptical, which it was only 40 people. That's a very limited sample. But it is something that looks like it might show promise. So what is Trump supposed to say? Is he, as you say about the pilot, is he supposed to get up there and say, you know, we got a serious epidemic here, and I want you to take a look at one another because maybe half of you aren't going to be here in a couple of weeks. You're going to be dead.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, is he supposed to do that? You're right. I mean, I'm laughing because, but you're exactly right. What is he supposed to do? Say, take a look at the guy next to you because more than very good chance that he's not going to be here next week.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Come on.
And, you know, it's just insane. It is up to him. Look, every general look at Eisenhower during the Second World War. Look at Lincoln. Look at all of the people who have to inspire, and that's the word. The key word is to inspire, because they have got to create in the minds of the public the idea that, hey, this is not going to be easy, but we're going to get through it. And when we get through it, we're going to be stronger than before. Because as the saying goes, what does not destroy us makes us stronger. And they need to see that. And instead, what are they doing? They're towing the communist line out of China. They would rather listen to the Chinese Communist Party than they would the President of the United States.
Right.
And it was the Chinese Communist Party that got us into this thing.
Right. At the very least, they didn't share information about the virus. And
right.
and a lot of the problem, yeah, a lot of the problems that we're having are based on the fact that we never got this information from the Chinese. But I just look at all of this, and I'm sitting there, you know, as I said, I was listening to it on the radio. I was not watching it on television. And sometimes on the radio, you can actually hear more things. That's one of the reasons why a lot of times I prefer to listen to things. And I'm listening to this, and here you have the President of the United States with a team of experts that is, I think, second to none. You know, this guy,
yes.
Fauci, is fabulous. The other lady, Dr. Birx, is fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting there and they're talking, and some idiot from the press is offended because we're calling this the Chinese virus.
Yes,
and I'm sitting
exactly.
there saying, you know, you've got the entire – I bet you that 80% of the country is listening to this, and they're going, lady, are you kidding me? This
yeah.
is what really worries you? That we're calling this the Chinese virus, okay? I mean, is this what really offends you? And then she says, well, some Chinese Americans may be offended. No, they're not. The people
no,
offended
they're not.
Are white
and if
liberals.
They are, the hell with it. I mean,
well,
you're always going to find somebody who's offended by something.
Right. But what, you know, the people offended with this are these little white liberals who take all these things personally.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you that if you went into the Chinese community, in any community in the country, and you ask them about the Chinese virus, they go, yeah, that came out of China, didn't it? I mean, it's ridiculous. When they called it the Spanish flu, I don't remember my Spanish grandfather getting offended about it. I mean, come on. But
of course
this
not.
Is what. But this is what drives me crazy, that they seem to focus on all of the irrelevant things, and they don't give this president, or any president really. I would be saying the same thing if we had a Democrat, because there are times when you got to put the party to the side and worry about bigger things. Frank, I'm going to take a break for a second, and then we'll continue.
Sure.
But, you know, when you mentioned great generals in the past, a day or so before the decision was made to go into D-Day, and I'm sure you know this from your history, General Eisenhower told his subordinates, look, take me down. I want to say hello to some of the troops. Because he really, deep down inside, he knew he was about to make a decision that would probably cost the lives of anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 of the young men that he was sending to war. So he went to see these young men, and he inspired them. And can you imagine if Eisenhower had said to them, hey, guys, you know, about 3,000 or 6,000 of you are not going to make it back, so please write a letter to your mom today and tell her goodbye. That's not what a great leader does. What a great leader does is he knows the risk, and he inspires people, which is what Trump is doing. But these members of the press, Frank, drive you insane with some of these questions.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No.
Go ahead, Frank. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just don't see it because, like you're saying, why would you do this? What do you hope to gain by doing this? To destroy the credibility of the man who has to lead us out of this? It's insane.
Well, I think some of them, frankly, are so invested in their hatred of Trump that they've lost their common sense. And that's what I think it is. They hate Trump so much that they've lost their common sense. And that's what I think is happening to many of them. The good news is, before we go on break, the good news is that some of the polling data is starting to come out, and significant majorities are supporting what the president is doing. And it's not because he's Trump. It's because he is trying to get things done. He's showing leadership. And that's what people like to see. They don't want to hear things. They want to see a man showing leadership. And when you've got the governor of California, who's a Democrat, the governor of New York, who's a Democrat, praising a Republican president, he must be doing something right, Frank.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I promised you a break, and I'm going to give you a break, Frank. So we're going to take a little break, folks. We'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting today with our good friend Frank Burke up in Wisconsin and talking a little bit about the media. Frank, you wrote a book about the media. Just tell us a little bit about that. I have a link on the show information, but just tell us a little bit about that book and what was the point of the book, and then I want to come back and close it up talking a little bit more about the media. So please,
sure.
Go ahead.
The concept of the book, Silvio, was about the media and its relationship with the justice system. If you think about the number of criminal cases that happen, or cases involving the justice system, white collar crime, violent crime, whatever, and how the media has very often gotten into the situation and has driven the narrative, has literally set the narrative, as you're saying, about what's happened with this situation. And very often it has created a very a perversion of justice, if you will. Or the media has actually set the stage for a crime to be committed. And then, you know, been very self-righteous after. So a good example of that would be Enron, where the business media and the media generally gave the company, oh, my God, oh, you couldn't say enough good things about it. 7 years, I think, in a row, it was the greatest American company in Fortune magazine. And ultimately, you know, the thing fell apart because it was so filled with incompetency and corruption. So really, how good was their reporting on it? And you look at the number of times in a criminal case that they will demand immediate justice, and it has resulted in the police going after someone who may or may not have been the one. Clint Eastwood's movie, Richard Jewell, is a very good example of that. And who is it? Spectrum is running a series on it now. The Richard Jewell case, where Jewell was a guy, not terribly bright guy, but he was a security guard in Atlanta during the Olympics. And he spotted what he thought was a suspicious package and got the people away from it. And it blew up, it killed some people, but it would have killed many, many more had he not done that. So the FBI gets involved, and the media gets involved, and they say, you know, I'll bet this guy was the one who did it. And, of course, he wasn't, but they ruined his life. So
they sure did. Yeah,
that's what it's about.
Well, and I'll take it to another example, which I think happened after you wrote the book. But this is the young – remember the case of the police officer and the young black man in Missouri outside of St. Louis. I forgot the name of the town, but, you know, the young man, I mean, the whole narrative was created by the media that the police officer had pointed a gun at this guy, you know, hands up, don't shoot. Well,
yes,
it turns
exactly.
out that the whole thing was created. That never happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the police officer, his whole life was destroyed. He had to leave the police force, and the police force lost a good police officer. This guy had to leave town because there were threats on his life. He was accused of doing something he never did. Hands up, don't shoot. That never happened. And yet, you know, you had reporters running around saying that that's what happened. So, you know, these are examples of – and then what about the other case? Remember the young guys down in Washington, D.C. last year with the red hat, with the Make America Great Again hat?
Yes.
And who was being accused of racism and everything else. It turns out the whole thing was a lie when people saw the video. And then you have the guys in Chicago. Remember the movie star or television star who was claiming that he was attacked by a couple of guys wearing
whatever his name is. Yeah.
And this is being repeated by the media. You've got CNN doing panels on this stuff. The whole thing turns out to be a lie. Now there's a lawsuit, at least with the young man out of Kentucky. There's a lawsuit. And I would really like to see that young man get justice in court because his whole life was destroyed. I mean, these people don't realize that once you get into the internet like that, they can never delete all the articles about you that are in the internet. Because once you're in there, I mean, somebody Googles your name and this whole lie is going to come up, Frank.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing, you know. It's something that you know, there was the old saying about the woman who went to a priest to confess, and she said, I said some awful things about a neighbor of mine, and they weren't true. I accused her of some awful things, and they weren't true. And I really have to confess that. And the priest said, well, all right, for your penance, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take a feather pillow, and I want you to open it, and then take a walk through the park and scatter all of the feathers. And then I want you to go back and get every last feather. And she said, that's impossible. I can't do that. And he said to her, neither can you restore that woman's reputation.
Right. That's exactly right. No, that's it. That's it. Now, getting back to the case of President Trump here, I think what irritates many of us is not that the media is asking questions or holding him accountable. I'm all for that. But that he never seems to get a fair shot, that there doesn't seem to be that sense of fairness of just sort of stepping back for a second and saying, hey, this guy is in the middle of doing something very difficult. Let's just cut him a little slack, okay? You know, we can still ask him questions, but we don't have to nitpick in every one of these press conferences. And I'll say one last thing, Frank, before we go. I think the real loser of this virus, obviously people are going to die, you know that. People are going to be hurt. And there's going to be human as well as economic tragedies out of this, and that's a shame. But I think the real loser of all of this is going to be the media. I think the media has really hurt its reputation significantly, and I'm not sure they can get it back, Frank.
Oh, I don't think so. I think that the historic standard media cannot. I think that's over. I think the credibility factor is finished with those people. So they're hopefully will be new media. I mean, most people now get their media online from other sources. They don't buy the New York Times. They don't buy a lot of these other they don't watch TV. Some people do. But if you look, the ratings are very low, especially for the ones, the Trump haters. And even Fox News, you know, there are some things on that that tend to bother me a lot. Not that I believe that everything Trump does is perfect, but I've heard some things that were some people making unfair cases and not being challenged on it. And that's the point. Media exists to challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist to deface, to defame.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And I think, I mean, just to put what you just said in perspective, we're a nation of 330 million people. And on any given moment, less than a million people are watching CNN.
Yeah.
I mean, just to put that in perspective. So they have an audience. You know, there are radio stations in this country and some of our major markets that have a larger audience than CNN. So I think that tells you all you want to hear. Now, they obviously get a lot of publicity, but I was joking the other day with a friend saying that the only people watching CNN are the people stuck in airports. Because, I mean, there's not a heck of a lot more. But you're right. It isn't necessarily better for the other networks. I've kind of given up on the cable news networks, honestly. I don't watch that much of it anymore. And every once in a while, I'll tune in if there's, like today, for example, if there's something of consequence, like a press conference or whatever. But I think for the most part, I've given up on it, because what you're basically getting at night, what you're basically getting at night is opinion television.
Yes.
And if you go to Fox News, you're going to get a right-center point of view. If you go to CNN, well, you're going to get 24/7 anti-Trump panels. And if you go to MSNBC, well, I don't even know what to call that. I mean, that is so far out crazy that I don't even know what to call that anymore. I mean, when you've got Rachel Maddow, I mean that normally would qualify for psychiatric care.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, she's out of her mind. She's been promoting every crazy Trump conspiracy known to man. So, I mean, I don't even consider that television. But altogether, that's all there is. So that's why I don't watch that much of it, Frank.
You know, I've got to say this, and I really don't care. You know, maybe it offends some people, maybe it doesn't, but she comes on there dressed like a man. Now, would you trust somebody who came on dressed up like a woman? You know,
right.
I'm here to give you the truth.
Well, she has done so many crazy conspiracy
shows.
She's
allowed to. I don't deny that.
That's the part that amazes me. That's the part that amazes me, that, you know, her people there continue to allow this. But it happens, so I guess we have the last word. We can shut it off, and I think a lot of Americans are. I mean, very much so, and they're not really watching this, because there's other alternative media where people can, frankly, get their news in a more reliable fashion. Well, Frank, I knew that it was going to be exciting.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
And that is this. You know, I think one of the effects, the worst effect and the ultimate effect of political correctness, you say, where does that path lead? Okay. It leads to, if not a tolerance, a celebration of insane ideas. Who would have believed that a Bernie Sanders, with his ranting and raving and communism and socialism, could be taken seriously by people? Who would believe a Rachel Maddow or any of these people? The guy who looks like a pencil eraser, Morning Joe, those people could be taken seriously.
Well, they're not by a lot of people, because their audiences, as I say, are rather small. I always say this to people, you know, I talk to people overseas a lot of times, and I say to them, folks, nobody watches that in the United States. I mean, when you talk to people in other countries, they say, well, I was watching this on CNN, or I was watching this, and I say, folks, nobody watches that over here, okay?
Yeah.
And because really their audiences are super small in the United States. They're not as important here as I think people think they are. And they're also not as influential as they think they are. And I think we saw that recently with the New York Times. You know, the New York Times endorsed the two candidates that the Democrat Party rejected. You know, and yet they continue to think they're so influential. Frank, I want to thank you for joining me, and I want to thank you for your input. It was a lot of fun. I knew that it would be, and that's why I thought about you immediately when I knew that we were going to talk about the news media. So I'm going to let you get back to your climate change.
Thank you so much, Silvio.
My pleasure. And you send me an email when it changes again, okay?
I will indeed. Well, that should be later tonight.
Later tonight, right? That weather up there in the Midwest is pretty crazy. Thank you, Frank. Have a wonderful day.
Right. Thank you, and bless you in the audience.
Okay. Thank you so much. Our good friend, Frank Burke, up in Wisconsin, always have a lot of fun chatting with him. He wrote a great book, and I'm going to really recommend that you check it out. I have a link to that on the show information. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.